Welcome, and bringing the State Affairs Committee to order at 3:10 p.m., a few ticks later than usual. Will the clerk please call the roll?
Representative Tuck. Representative Knopf. Representative Wolf.
Here.
Representative Josephson. Representative Ledoux.
Here.
Representative Birch.
Here.
Representative Johnson. Chair Price Tompkins.
Here. And with the minimum of four members present, we have a quorum. And thank you, Martha, as always, for being our recording secretary. Please silence cell phones. And on today's agenda, we have two items, House Bill 31 for the third time relating to sexual assault examination kits, giving it a thorough review and clearing up all questions for the record. I'm hoping to move this bill today in committee, and in addition, House Bill 74, the Real ID Bill. I know this has been exciting over the last 24 hours, bearing witness to the full spectrum of perspectives out there. To clarify on process for today, in addition to hearing HB 31 for the third time and barring significant unforeseen questions that arise, moving it from committee on House Bill 74, it is my intent to hear this bill, hear testimony from the Department of Administration and the DMV, take committee questions, and depending on time available, take things from there. I understand that there's a lot of information and perspectives and opinion that may be brought to bear, and we can sort of take it as it comes. So starting off with House Bill 31, Representative Tarr and or staff, would you be able to come up and maybe to start off present on, I guess, sort of where we left off and clarifying, I guess, sort of the definition of backlogs and some of the questions that Ms. Olson from STAR was speaking to in terms of victims' ability to sort of dictate what happens to an untested rape kit.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Representative Garantar from Anchorage, joined by Celeste Novak, staff who's working on this bill, and I'll try and answer questions and then punt to Celeste if we need additional clarification. The question on the terms are basically used being interchangeably related to untested sexual assault examination kits and the backlog of sexual assault examination kits. So when we talk about the untested kits, those are the ones who have been sent that have been sent to the crime lab for processing and are in some stage of processing, and in the one pager, that's where the roughly 100 and some comes from. The backlog is the 3,600 that are the untested kits, and that's where the federal grant comes in, and those are the ones that they're trying to work through a process of how those might be tested using the available grant funds. What Ms. Olson was concerned about is a category called anonymous victim reporting, and nothing in this bill is intended to interfere with that process as required by the Violence Against Women Act. That allows a victim to come forward, have the kit tested, because, again, this is sensitive biological evidence that needs to be collected within 90 hours for it to be usable, so that victim can come forward, have the kit done, but then that can be retained until such time as the victim would want to come forward and, you know, try to take that, you know, and have intervention in a criminal case. Excuse me. So I hope that clears up the questions, and I believe that was Representative Birch that had that question. So I don't know if I should pause there to see if that clears up that question.
Yeah. Any further questions from the committee? Representative Birch.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. As it related to the numbers, the 3,600, I guess the question was, do they all need to be processed, or are there some that are held back for one legal reason or another, or is it just you have a clear run at just go ahead and processing all kits and kind of getting caught up? I think there was some certainly confusion on my part as to, you know, specifically what the limitations are with the anonymity piece, and also with the chain of custody as far as making sure that they're properly held in case they get a match sometime down, you know, 10 years from now, mm-hmm. That they're properly held and managed.
Through the chair, Representative Birch. So the kits, once they become evidence, you know, are handled like evidence for any other case. So there is a chain of command in terms of those remain possession of law enforcement. The anonymous victim reporting is, for example, STAR in Anchorage allows for that to happen, and so they would retain possession of that because at that point the individual is not, you know, seeking criminal charges. So that's how those two would be separated. And I think, okay. Thank you.
Thank you, Representative Birch. Any further questions, Representative Wohl or Representative Ledoux? Great. Well, thank you so much for your forbearance, Representative Tarr and Ms. Novak, for the sort of decisive clarification. And do I hear a motion?
Yes, Mr. Chairman. I move House Bill 31 from committee with individual recommendations and attached fiscal note.
And are there any objections from the committee? Hearing none, we will move House Bill 31 with individual recommendations and attached fiscal note from committee and take an at-ease to do the paperwork.
Thank you.
Coming back on the record, House Bill 31 has been moved, the paperwork done. The next item on the agenda is House Bill 74, and it looks like we have a all-star delegation from DOA. Would you be able to introduce yourselves and identify yourselves and affiliation for the record, and please, it seems, share the presentation that is queued up.
Hi, Mr. Chair. Thank you very much. My name is Leslie Rydell. I'm the Deputy Commissioner at the Department of Administration. And sitting with me, I have Minta Montalvo. She's our legislative liaison. And I will say we have online as well the Director of the DMV, Marla Thompson. And Marla is an expert in this bill as well, so we may do a lifeline to her occasionally if you have questions that I cannot answer. So go ahead and start. All right. So today we're talking about Real ID HB 74. And just a little bit about it. You probably know that in 2005, Congress passed a bill to require states to comply with Real ID. It affects all the states, the five territories, and Washington, D.C. What it does is it requires the states to have a driver's license or ID that verifies a person's ID, their lawful status. It makes the card needs to have a digital photo, a signature, a unique number. And it requires us to check certain databases to make sure that the person who's applying for the card is the person applying for the card. And if we aren't offering, if we're offering an ID that is not a real ID, that it's clearly marked that the ID is either real ID compliant or it's not real ID compliant. And I'll just say when I say real ID, that means driver's license or ID. That's kind of the whole thing. So our bill will allow the state to comply with the law and allow Alaskans to choose between having a compliant ID or a non-compliant ID. It's totally up to the consumer, the customer, when they come up to get their ID, which one they would want to purchase. Right now, we have an extension with the federal government for complying with the law, the Real ID law, that lasts until June 6th of 2017. It will expire if we have not made any progress to changing our current law to allow us to do Real ID. There are five states that are not compliant right now, and they're listed on here. But two of those states, just to note, Washington and Minnesota, have what is called an enhanced license, which allows them, which is a different kind of a license that allows them to cross borders, and it actually has a chip, and it's also an enhanced ID beyond the regular ID. So
Do you want to stop me if you have questions, or do you want to just?
Yeah, I think that's a good question. We can take questions as they come, and I imagine there will be a few. Representative Wohl.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I'm going to have a few questions, but the one that just occurred to me was, you mentioned other states have an enhanced ID so they can cross borders. Is that compliant with real ID? Can they get onto a military base in Alaska?
Through the chair, yes, Representative Wohl. It also asks for extra information similar to what the real ID does. It actually has a chip in it, which is similar to your chip in your passport. So we could offer that too, but it actually costs more money for us to do the enhanced ID versus the real ID. It's more labor intensive.
Follow up?
Yes, thank you. And maybe we'll get to all this as you conclude more testimony, but people in Alaska will now have according to this bill, have a choice between getting a quote real ID or a non-real or non-compliant. For local purposes, driving cars, and they're both accepted. Are they going to be noticeably different? And will people know? I mean, besides waiting for your license to expire, I mean, maybe someone who's out of the loop and not staying up on a lot of issues maybe falls through the cracks, and then a year from now they go to the airport to try to board a plane. They go, hey, you don't have the right kind of ID, and he's like, well, it works fine in Tok. And they haven't, been on a plane in a year. So are you accommodating for those kind of situations, I guess?
Sure. Through the chair, yes, Representative Wohl, the IDs will be very clearly different. One will, the real ID has to be marked as real ID to comply. So it'll be pretty clear that that's a real ID. Actually, Department of Homeland Security has already started at airports with signage. They're putting it, on the web, and they're doing ads, and as it ramps up closer to the due dates, I would assume if the state chooses not to go down the real ID route, that we might also try to do some advertising as well, that what's going to happen when you get ready to fly or go onto a military base. But the state are not doing anything right now. The TSA and the Homeland Security is doing all that.
Thank you.
Representative Ledoux.
So what happens if this bill isn't passed?
Through the chair. If the bill isn't passed, the state, we've been told by Homeland Security that we will lose our waiver as of June 6, 2017. So the first, and Minta's fast, oh, I thought you were fast forwarding. There's a timeline in the presentation. The first thing that will happen is that to get onto a military base, Alaskans will be asked to provide alternate forms of ID to get on the base. That might be a passport. It might be if you have an enhanced ID from another state or a real ID from another state. It could be a military card. It's all sorts of different kinds of ID that the federal government will ask us to get onto a military base. That'll be the first one. And then the second one, if you want to look at the slide 8 that we're on, January 22nd, that TSA checkpoints, they will also ask for more ID as well. And October 1st of 2020, the federal government is saying that people will not be allowed to fly without the real ID.
And if I may interject there, so that January 22nd, 2018 mm-hmm. date on the timeline, what, say we haven't passed legislation at that point in time, what will the sort of real world experience of an Alaskan who just has at that point a non-real ID compliant driver's license have when trying to go through TSA security?
Right. So through the chair, sorry, to answer a question. So they'll ask for, the TSA will ask for some alternate IDs, and I have to say, they give us types of IDs that they'll ask for. They don't say right this minute it's going to definitely be X, Y, or Z, but the kind that they're going to ask for are things like an immigration card, a military ID, a transportation worker card, a passport or a passport card, a veteran's ID,
some trusted traveler cards, tribal cards. There are other federal types of IDs that they'll accept. But on October 1st of 2020, they said that they're not going to even accept these alternative. That's what they're saying right now. I'm sorry. Meant to just correct me by pointing something out. I misstated that. That they will accept another former ID, a federal ID, to get on a plane. So a passport would get you on a plane. But if you don't have that, sorry.
And given, I think we're kind of forcing you to hopscotch all over
That's
the presentation, maybe Representative Birch a question, then we can maybe give you the floor to get through what's a relatively short slide deck and then open it up.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Thank you for being here. The concerns that I've gotten are picking up in emails and stuff relate to privacy. I would say more than anything else, and relate to issues regarding being in a database. But I guess, and you'd mentioned ID status, photo signature, unique number, and checking a database. And I was wondering if you just could briefly address the distinctions between a current database and a driver's license record. In other words, if I'm driving a car in Nevada and while I'm traveling and I get pulled over for one reason or another and I hand the guy my driver's license, presumably he can look me up even though it's an Alaska driver's license. And I'm just wondering if you could maybe just see what the distinction is and if that fear is founded or not.
What's going to be different? I think if you go to the...
And maybe we just need to go through the deck, but I...
Oh, go to... Actually, go, if we could go to slide 4, I think I can answer your question. One thing that... Oh, through the chair. Sorry. Mr. Representative Birch, one thing that we hear, too, is this is going to put you into some humongous database that that everybody can have access to. I wanted to say, and it's in one of my slides here, that... Your data that for the driver's license stays in our state database. What the Real ID does is it allows us to go out and reach out to databases that actually already exist, a passport database, to get information. You hand me a passport, I go out to that database and I say, is this really Representative Birch? Mm-hmm. And based on the information he's given me. Or you give me a birth certificate. I go out to a database that already exists, the birth certificate database. I say, is that really Representative Birch? So that I can tell that your information you gave me is really you. It's gives us those bridges into those databases. Right now, we can't do that without the technology. We need the technology to be able to go do that.
So if I might, through the chair, as follow-up, so the Real ID permits you access to things like birth certificates and passports and otherwise that the driver's license does not connect you to?
Right. And actually, through the chair, I think we'll get to some of that.
My questions. Conceptually, I'm with you. I think it's. I mean, I've had constituents let me know very sincerely that they will be forbidden to access federal military bases and so forth commercially, and it's really going to be a problem. Kids getting on base and so forth. So, I think it's something we actually really have to deal with. I think it's shows good initiative to have a kind of a parallel tracks for those people who, for whatever reason, or don't want to sign up. Can do that. So look forward to the deck. Thank you.
And thanks for the questions, committee members. So let's maybe charge through the presentation. Thank you so much for our splurge of curiosity, and we'll hold questions until the end of the presentation and go from there.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. So what the bill does, like I said, it does allow us to offer the choice of a compliant or a non-compliant ID. It gives us the authority to spend money. The legislature in 2008 passed a bill that said that the DMV could not spend money on implementing Real ID. So that's why we can't build those databases, build the technology that allows us to reach into databases without it. And it allows us to charge an additional $5 fee for the Real ID to recoup some of the cost. I think on the right side, I kind of went over that already. We're not allowed to spend the money right now. If you don't have the ID, you won't be able to get into the base with just your driver's license or fly with just a current driver's license. And the other real reason, too, was the bill was passed in 2005 to help prevent identity fraud, identity theft. And so part of our checks and balances helps us help you not to have someone else use your ID or get an ID under your name. So that's part of it, too. Page four, what will change? One thing that will change is right now when you come into the driver's license, the DMV, you sign up to get a driver's license, and at the end you get your photo taken. They will require that we actually take your photo at the beginning and the end. That disallows someone from coming in, applying for the driver's license, and somebody else getting the photo at the end, like maybe an underage student who wants to help their, you know, an older person who wants to help an underage person get a fake ID, or any kind of trickery of signing up one way and having a photo at the end. So that's one thing that'll happen. The DMV will validate the birth date and passport information through those reach out databases that I talked about. There'll be unique designs. They'll be really clearly marked that this isn't for getting into federal places. And we also want to extend how long the driver's license is good for. We are going to be charging a little bit more, and we want to make them 8 years instead of five. So Alaskans don't have to come back every 5 years. They can come back every 8 years for a driver's license.
Mr. Chair.
Representative Wolt, is this a question?
I can wait. I'll wait.
Okay. Okay, please continue. And for the record, Representative Tuck joined us at 3:32 p.m. and Representative Knopf at 3:29. Welcome both. And for your reference, we've passed out Representative Tarr's legislation, and we're hearing the DOA presentation, obviously, on the Real ID Bill. Please continue.
Oh, thank you. Thank you, Mr. Chair. So page five, what won't change will still require the same documents when you come in to get a driver's license. A social security card, a birth certificate, a passport, some ID that shows us who you are. We'll still continue to background check our employees. We've been doing that for quite a while now. And we'll still use a secure facility to print the driver's license for us, somewhere that can print. We don't have a facility here in Alaska that can produce the driver's license that we need. On page six, I think this might help your question, Representative Birch. This is really super complicated looking, so don't get freaked out. Everything that's not in yellow is what we do right now. The yellow is what would be changed when the Real ID, if you got a Real ID. So if you walked in the door and you said, the one actually thing that's not on here, we should ask, there's a place here where we'd ask you right when you walk in, do you want a Real ID or a non-compliant ID? If you don't want a Real ID, you would do all the stuff we do right now that's not yellow. If you want a Real ID, we'd go ahead and take your picture. Everything else would be the same, and you get down to the first yellow box where it tells you the electronic databases that we would reach into. And again, these are not new databases. They exist. We would be building our technology with the bridges to reach in to get this kind of information. We already reach into the top three databases right now to see if you're the real, trying to prove that you're the real person applying for the ID. And then we keep going through the same process, and at the end, you'd have one ID or the other. So I know this looks complicated, but we wanted to show that it's not really totally crazily different. On page seven, this is also super simplistic, but just to show you, we would ask for the same kind of paperwork when you walk in the door, whether you are getting a compliant or a non-compliant. We still need, this is for the first time you got your driver's license, we'd still need a primary document to prove who you are, a social security card, a passport, a birth certificate, tribal card, those kind of things to prove who you are. So those would not change. Page 8 is the timeline that we just talked about. I think that we covered most of that. Page 9, I just wanted to go over it a little bit with you because this actually already started happening this fall. Before we got our waiver, there was a little window of a couple weeks where if we weren't going to have introduced a bill, Homeland Security was not going to give us any more waivers. They gave us a waiver till June 6th because the state said we were going to at least introduce a bill. So they started the process on military bases in Anchorage and Fairbanks, actually all over the state, saying that people would need the extra ID to get on base. So we started getting calls immediately, actually, and some of you, especially Fairbanks, may have as well, because there's quite a few projects going on up in the Fairbanks spaces with the F-35s and other things going on. So people were quite concerned and were contacting us. And this is just to let you know that it's not just military employees on the bases. We actually have quite a few state workers on base, quite a few civilians that come and go. The Anchorage School District reached out to us right away because they have four schools on base. They have two departments out there, and then, of course, they have all their students that go back and forth for sports and all that kind of stuff. And then the Fairbanks North Star Borough School District also has students on base. So those were the groups we kind of heard from when that little window of needing extra ID was in play. If we lose the waiver in June, we've been told that the bases would go back to that again. It would just kind of revert right back to that same scenario where they'd start asking for the extra ID. On page 10, again, this is a list of some of the alternative IDs that you could get, that you could use to get on these bases. And I think, not to put words in people's mouths who called us, but just to reflect some of the calls, yes, they could use a passport to get on, but a passport costs, I think it's like $125. And so especially some of the companies, the trucking companies, the moving companies, and the school district, the idea of having to get a passport for all their workers was a hurdle that they saw and that they were expressing to us. So these are some of the IDs that you could use to get on base. And we have a couple of things in the appendix. I won't speak to them, but if you have questions, glad to take them.
Thank you very much for the presentation. And Representative Wohl, I think you definitely had a question, and I'll take others and start a queue.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I have a few, so I don't know if you want to do all mine or go around Robin here, but you said that the licenses will be valid for 8 years. How long is it? I could just look at mine, I think. How long is a current driver's license, non-real, just basic ID,
sure,
good for?
Through the chair, Representative Wohl, it's 5 years right now.
Okay.
And let's give you... Go at it.
You're quick. There's nothing too complicated here. So in the past, my driver's license expires. I go into the DMV. I don't recall having a bunch of additional documents, proof of residence. I thought, and maybe I'm wrong, I could just go into my old license. They pull up something. They take a new picture. Maybe my weight's gone up a little bit. My hair color's changed, but anyhow, no additional documents. Am I mistaken? And now will I have to go in for this real ID with a bunch of other documents? It sounds like I need at least a few.
Through the chair, Representative Wohl, I should have emphasized that it's the first time you go in that you need those. And actually, I might ask Marla Thompson to answer when we're switching to the real ID, if it's okay with the chair. Ask Marla to answer. Marla, will people have to get the real ID, sort of reprove their who they are?
That's a great question. And yes, the first time that they come in to get a real ID, we would require that information again because they probably brought it in the first time. But for real ID, the very first time, but you would not need it for renewals.
And Ms. Thompson, for the record, could you identify yourself and state your affiliation?
Oh, I'm sorry. Yes, Marla Thompson, and I'm the director of the DMV.
Thank you. Representative Wolf, further questions?
Two more short ones, please. Thank you, Mr. Chair, through the chair. Are other states doing this duality of IDs, the sort of compliant, non-compliant?
Through the chair, yes, there are. There are at least a couple, and I think, I don't know if I know the exact number, but we're not the first to do it. And, in fact, Homeland Security suggested it to us as an alternative, but for states that are not wanting to just accept it right away.
Thank you. For my last question, do you foresee that eventually real IDs will be accepted and the database, and, in fact, you explained that there's not a the data that you take is not actually uploaded to some national database. Rather, you now have access
to more national data, if I'm not mistaken. Anyhow, do you foresee that the real ID will become the standard ID and that eventually this non-compliant ID won't even be available?
Through the chair, I actually, I would think with this legislation, we probably always offer the non-compliant ID unless we change the law again. We are guessing, based on other states' experience, that probably 50% of the people renewing will get the real ID. That might go up as time goes by, but I would, unless we change the law, I would assume we'd always offer the non-compliant ID.
Please,
just on that last comment, Alaska is sort of a state that requires more people to fly in and out of it, I would think. So the need for a real ID is pretty real. So anyhow, thank you.
Representative Ledoux.
The other states that haven't complied yet, and you mentioned two of them, I think, already have enhanced IDs, so they probably don't even have to do anything. Who are the other three, and what are they doing about it, if anything?
Through the chair, Representative Ledoux, on page two, Washington, Montana, so Montana doesn't have anything right now. Minnesota has an enhanced ID, Missouri, and Maine. I had to remember my initials there. So there's three that don't have anything right now. Their residents are having to do the extra ID to get on bases and to fly.
Follow up?
If they don't have an enhanced ID.
Do they have waivers right now?
No. Those are the three, through the chair, those are the five states that don't have a waiver. So there's 26 states that offer and 19 states are like us that are in the waiver scenario.
Just one more follow-up. So has anybody contacted the authorities in those states to see how things are working out there?
Through the chair, I haven't done that. We can do that. Some of our military, in the Department of Military and Veterans Affairs, I've talked with them who have counterparts in other states, especially some of the five here. And it's been an issue for their states. Other than that, just that their people do have to have extra ID, and some people find it inconvenient. Some people don't, but some people do.
Thank you.
And I see Deputy Commissioner Bob Dole from DMVA is online and could take questions, and maybe I'll just jump in. Deputy Commissioner, if you're there, do you have any perspective on Representative Ledoux's last question in terms of any conversations you might have had or DMVA officials may have had with those in other states with non-compliant IDs?
For the record, Deputy Commissioner Bob Dole, to answer your question, Mr. Chairman, and through the Chair, Representative Ledoux, we're still gathering kind of a quantitative info, but anecdotally we're hearing about these incidents occurring. Most recently, somebody from Minnesota without the enhanced ID when traveling to a military base required somebody with a military identification from the base to escort them the entire time as if they were a foreign national while they were on the base. You can do that with a onesie or a twosie, but for general vendors or someone coming on base, that'd be difficult. But what they're requiring is that the person be treated as you can't verify the ID, so they require an escort the whole time they're on base.
Thank you.
Thank you, Deputy Commissioner. Representative Birch.
Yeah, just as far as application, when we look at the Anchorage School District and the Fairbanks North Star Borough School District, Mr. Chairman, I was just wondering, obviously, I assume the children don't have to have any sort of an ID card, so what are we talking about there, the bus drivers or the teachers that are on and off? I'm just curious as to who that is going to impact.
Sure. Through the chair, Mr. Representative Birch, yes, teachers, school bus drivers, custodians. There are two school district departments on base, their IT and their fine arts department, so those employees as well, if they're not already military families, they'd have to have the extra. Coaches going back and forth for sports, volunteers in the schools.
And then, if I might follow up, this isn't just limited. I've had some fairly extensive discussion with the Alaska Truckers Association. They're very concerned. It's in Anchorage. It's not too big. I mean, it's an issue, but in Anchorage, a lot of the truck drivers actually have Twix cards, so they can ear in and out of the port. So they have many of them would have some of the qualifications necessary to access the military bases. But in places like Fairbanks or other areas around the state that are near source, some sort of a military installation, that those folks are really going to be in a tangle down the road without this access to this ID. And I don't have a sense for what the numbers are, but I would suspect it's significant.
Through the chair, I agree. And I think, too, Representative Dole, sorry, Deputy Commissioner Dole, sorry, pointed this out to me, too. There's actually quite a few civilian businesses on base, food restaurants, and people coming and going for that business, and also truckers, movers, a lot of moving back and forth on base, where they're not necessarily like the Trucking Association represents, but they are driving vehicles, and so they might not have the TWIC card too, but they definitely a lot of movement back and forth.
Thank you.
Any further questions from the committee? Representative Tuck?
Mr. Chair, thank you. So I don't understand why it's necessary for people to resubmit the same information that's already been submitted to get an ID in the first place. If it's not going to change, the documents that you have to prove isn't going to change. I mean, unless I'm misunderstanding your chart, looks like on page 7, it's all the same. So if you're going to get a new license today, or if you're going to get a non-compliant option, what's different about a real ID that you need to submit that hasn't already been submitted?
Through the chair, Representative Tuck, if you're getting a non-compliant license, you're right. If you're renewing it, you would not need the new proving documents. But if you're getting a real ID for the first time, the part of the real ID requirements are that we, for the first time getting the real ID, that we check you one more time through these databases to make sure you're the person that is applying for the ID. Does that answer your question?
So,
follow up?
Yes, thank you, Mr. Chair. So just got to show the same documentation all over again. That's basically it.
Through the chair, for the first time. When a renewal, you would not have to.
Okay, so if I may, Mr. Chair.
Please.
So these organizations, I mean, Social Security and electronic verification, that's a government agency. Problem driver pointer system, is that a government agency or is that a nonprofit private agency?
Through the chair, I actually, if I could again, refer to Marla Thompson to answer some more specific questions on the databases, that'd be great.
Ms. Thompson, did you hear the question?
Hi, this is Marla Thompson with the DMV. Question on the different databases. The problem driver pointer system is one that we currently use, and it's through AMVA, and it's called PDPS. It just allows us to check with other states for folks that have points on their driving record, and so we can make sure that we're only giving people who have are eligible to be a driver. Getting a driver's license in Alaska.
Follow-up. And how long have we been using that system?
I would need to check on that. I'll need to get back to you on that. I'm sorry, I don't have that answer.
And follow-up.
Follow-up.
And what's AMVA stand for?
That's a great question. I'm sorry. So the answer is more than 10 years right now with the problem driver pointer system. And AMVA is the American Association of Motor Vehicle Administrators. It's a tax-exempt nonprofit organization that helps develop models with motor vehicle administrations and law enforcement throughout the United States and Canada, and we're a part of that organization. So basically, it helps us set up workflow between states in regards to making sure that you only have one driver's license and that the people that have a driver's license are allowed to have a driver's license.
Follow-up?
Yes, thank you, Mr. Chair. So it's similar to like the ERIC program for voter ID. Is that correct?
Through the
Deputy Commissioner?
Through the chair, my understanding of the ERIC, it's similar, yes. And on page 12 is a definition of what AMVA is, just for your reference as well.
Okay, and then going down to the next one, Mr. Chair.
Please.
The SPEX CDLIS, state-to-state verify existence of license in its form other than states electronically, so that's like another division of that's similar to ERIC. Is that correct?
Through the chair, this is, and Marla can help me again if I'm wrong, this allows us, it's a bridge that allows us to go to through the AMVA, to go through the state to make sure that you don't have a driver's license in more than one state. It's a federal law that you can have one driver's license in one state. So this allows us to do a quick check on that.
And if I may, Ms. Chair.
Follow up, yes.
And that is not a federal agency. That is a nonprofit private organization.
Through the chair, yes, it goes through the AMVA.
And if I can just jump in here, these two entities that Representative Tuck just asked about, are they identified in the original federal authorizing legislation as entities and databases that have to be tied to Real ID?
Through the chair, I actually am going to turn to Marla on that one as well. I'm not positive about that.
Ms. Thompson, did you hear the question?
Yes, AMVA is mentioned in the Real ID Act. So these databases that are required, that they give you options to use, and CIDLIS, PDP, SOLVE, state to state, those are all mentioned as ways that you can make sure that you're checking the validity of the documents that have been presented to you.
Thank you. And sorry, Representative Tuck. Further questions,
thank
please
you,
go
sir.
Ahead.
So I see three that we've been using currently, three that we're going to be required to use to do the Real ID. And actually, when I look at that first one, I thought that was a Social Security agency. That's not. So all of these are private databasing companies that are nonprofit. I see head notes. Which ones aren't? Which ones are federal government agencies? If I may ask.
Through the chair, I'm sorry, I shouldn't have shaken my head. They're not companies. They are databases through the AMVA, but not separate companies. That's really what I was shaking my head about. Did I answer your question?
Just which ones are federal agencies or any type that are government agencies?
Through the chair, I think Marla can help me on that one.
And Ms. Thompson, please go ahead. And just a note for the record, Deputy Commissioner and Director Thompson, if you oscillate back and forth, I believe for the record, if you can trouble yourself to identify yourself and state your affiliation, that will be appreciated. Ms. Thompson, please go ahead.
Okay. So this is Marla Thompson with the DMV. And right now, AMVA supports the telecommunications to facilitate communications with all of the databases. So the databases like Department of State Passport Database, that's a U.S. database. What AMVA allows us to do is they've created portals and ways for states to easily connect to these databases. So because it's an organization that we belong to, it helps facilitate us, because otherwise it would be 50 different states going to these different groups and having to set up different databases. So it just helps with the overall communication and telecom platform that's used. SOLVE is federal. CIDLIS is also federal and overseen by FMCSA. So most of these, let's see, the other one would be SAVE. That is Systematic Alien Verification for Entitlement, so that's SAVE. And again, that's U.S., that's a federal program. And then the SAVE is DHS. I'm sorry. Department of Homeland Security.
And,
hopefully that answered them all.
Chair.
I know there's quite a few.
And Ms. Thompson, maybe just for clarity, perhaps a written response to that particular question could be helpful.
That'd be great, because I don't know what FMCA is. I'm trying to look for where that's at somewhere on this chart, and I don't see that anywhere. So, I'll draft a letter.
Okay.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Mr. Chair.
Representative Knopp.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. So I'm not sure who I'm asking the question of, but since I'm a latecomer to the party, I'm kind of curious why AS 44.99040 was enacted, when it was enacted, and what was the conversations. Why did a past legislative body prohibit the use of state funds to comply with this? Can somebody give me a history lesson, please?
Deputy Commissioner, or is there another legislator on the committee who can offer some institutional knowledge? Representative Tuck, please.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. You'll find that even last year, as recent as last year, is people have a problem with non-governmental agencies having databases on civilians. And we've had Price, Waterson, Cooper House, whatever. We had a breach that happened. It was a pretty major breach with the Department of Administration when there was the PERS and TERS investigation with Mercer that was taking place. It's just being able to contain and protect confidential information on Alaska residents and U.S. citizens. That's a concern.
An interesting point, Representative Tuck, and I think cybersecurity and protection of digital data is an increasingly important subject, and I just wanted to note, I think in the DOA overview, Commissioner Fisher mentioned the hire of a new CIO, the first ever in Alaska, and I was looking over his background, and he has an impressive, he's impressively credentialed in the subject of cybersecurity. So maybe this bill, maybe another bill, perhaps we'll get the chance to hear from him. But Representative Knopp, do you have further questions?
No.
Representative Wohl.
Thank you. Mr. Chair, I guess first and foremost, the comment Representative Tuck just made about cybersecurity, whether it's private or governmental, or that I'm guessing they're both equally susceptible. Is that fair? I think certain government agencies have been hacked into, and maybe that's not a question of your expertise. I don't know.
Deputy Commissioner, would you like to?
Through the chair, I'm not an expert, okay. And you're right, Representative Tompkins. We did, Chris Tompkins, we did hire a new CIO, and cybersecurity is one of the areas he'll be certainly focusing on. I do think it's true that public and private databases are always open to hacking, and we're always working to protect them.
Further questions?
Thank you. More to this actual bill. So on your flow chart here, which I followed with my glasses on.
Yes, I know.
I'm guessing this is for a brand new ID because it asks written tests and driving tests. So, again, I'm thinking of a guy like myself or a woman like Gabrielle who goes in and says, I better get my real ID. What do I need? I don't want to take any more tests. And there's a few additional documents I'm going to need. And then on here it also says passport data. There's a passport mentioning in here. Passport document data. Is a passport required, or that's just optional as a secondary ID?
Through the chair, Representative Wohl, no, you would not have to take the test again if you've already gotten a driver's license. So, yes, this chart is for the first-time person walking into
16-year-olds.
Yes. Okay. And to answer your other question on the passport, no, that's just one of the documents that you can bring in. So if you do bring in the passport as a document, it would allow us to go into that database and make sure that you're the right person. You're the person on the passport.
Follow-up.
And again, I'm sure there's all kinds of lists of IDs, of documentation, but again, so a person wants to get wants to get their real ID, so they would need a primary, a secondary, and a Social Security card along with proof of residency. Primary could be your driver's license, secondary, and maybe this is a DMV question, how many pieces of ID with an actual photo would you be mandated to have? In addition to your current driver's license?
Thank you. Through the chair, actually, I think that would be a great question for Marla Thompson from the DMV to answer.
Ms. Thompson, did you hear the question? If so, can you speak to it?
Yes. Hi, this is Marla Thompson with the DMV. Yes, what we would require would be just the driver's license that you currently have, because you'd have that with your photo on it. Then you would have your primary document, which could be a birth certificate. It could be a passport. It could be anything on that list. It doesn't have to be everything. So we do have options. It could be your green card. And then the secondary document would be your Social Security number. It doesn't even have to be the Social Security card. It would be your Social Security card would be your secondary document.
It could be
a secondary. So your secondary document would just be one of the list of documents. So it's not all of them. It's just whatever you want to provide.
Simple follow-up?
Sure. It also says proof of Social Security number, but you listed Social Security card as a secondary document, which seems a little redundant. For someone who has a driver's license and maybe can find my Social Security card, how many government agencies am I going to have to go to get IDs, to go to the DMV to get my real ID? But I guess there's a list, and I don't see a list in this paperwork that lists all the possible IDs, but maybe I have to dig a little deeper.
Deputy Commissioner, any? I think it might have been a rhetorical question, but if you have any thoughts, please.
Through the chair, thank you, Representative Wolt. There's some of the lists is on page 10, and I think you're right. Actually, we probably could do a better job in our presentation of making a better list so that you could look at it really clearly, and we'll do that for a next update. To answer your question, I think it will seem cumbersome, which also might reduce the amount of people that come in the first time to get the real ID unless they find the hassle factor of traveling and trying to get on base without having it. It might reduce the number of people who want to get it in the first place, but there will be a little bit of a hassle in the first blush.
And Representative Wolf, final follow-up and then...
Final follow-up, I'm done. Page 10 does list IDs for those acceptable to get under a military base, but not those that you would need to go to the DMV. And if you haven't been in the military or a federal ID, I mean, a lot of these cards you just wouldn't have anyways. So, anyhow, I'll stop asking questions.
And if I can interject a quick question, Representative Ledoux is in the queue. We'll get to you in just a second if you'll bear with us. So to the states that you were speaking to earlier, I believe Montana was one of them. Did I understand it correctly that if I'm a Montana resident and I go to the Great Falls Airport and I'm flying out to Seattle or wherever, that I would need one of these documents itemized on slide 10 in order to get through the TSA? Or what is the reality for a non-compliant state right now to get through, say, a TSA checkpoint?
Through the chair, to Mr. Chair. Right now, if you're not compliant, on page 8 lists the different timelines. If you're not compliant in one of those states, then just for right now, the restriction is on the military or federal facilities. It's not until January 22nd of 2018 that you're going to start facing it if you live in one of these states for flying, but it's coming pretty closely.
I'm sorry, and so thanks for the clarification. So on January 23rd of next year, if I live in Montana, the Montana legislature hasn't done anything, would the reality I then face at the Great Falls Airport be that I get to the airport and I need to present a passport, military ID, etc., in order to get through? Is that accurate?
Yes, Mr. Chair. That's what Homeland Security is saying right now will happen, yes.
Okay. And Representative Ledoux?
So do I understand correctly that the purpose of the federal government requiring the real IDs is to prevent identity fraud?
Through the chair, Representative Ledoux, I think at the time it was passed, it was partly identity fraud. It was partly to... Homeland Security. They passed the bill in 2005, back closer to some terrorist events, and I think that part of their purpose was Homeland Security as well.
Well, because to the extent that it is there to prevent identity fraud, I would think that having everybody's information in a database is more likely to cause identity fraud.
Through the chair, one thing I just want to emphasize again, yes, your information's already in all those databases that is listed on that chart of the flowchart, and this does not create a new database. This, your information in the Alaska DMV database, if you have a driver's license right now, is in our database right now. We will not be sending any extra. We're not sending our database to anybody. If anybody wants to find out if you have a driver's license in our state, just like the state to state, they have to come through the bridge just like we have to go through the bridge. They have to have specific credentials. Another DMV from another state have all your, not enough information that we could say yes or no, you do or don't have a driver's license. So we're not opening up our database to anybody else except a Alaska DMV, which we're doing right now.
Follow up?
But this organization, AM, whatever it is, I mean, doesn't that have access then to the state database?
Through the chair, and again, if the director of DMV wants to chime in after I'm done, they don't have access specifically. AMBA doesn't. It has to come through a state. They're the bridge, and it has to be a state that asks for the information, and it goes back through the bridge to that state. It doesn't hang out and live in AMVA.
Follow-up.
You know, I don't know exactly what to do about this because it seems like we're within a rock and a hard place. But as somebody who has to renew their credit card at least once a year, and it's usually around May, because somebody or other has broken into the credit card database, it makes me uncomfortable. And yet at the same time, you got to be able to fly.
Thank you, Representative Ledoux. And I guess I am feeling some sympathy towards the DOA delegation here, because to a certain extent it seems as though you're merely messengers imparting the wisdom of our federal government and Congress from circa 2005 legislation, but that does seem like a fair approximation. Representative Knopf, and
go ahead. Thank you, Mr. Chair. So I guess I'm curious. It seems a little redundant. It almost appears that the Real ID Act is doing exactly what the TWIC, Transportation Worker Identification Card, were designed to do. I think I remember the rollout of that, talking about access to airports, harbors, military facilities, and I do know that I've had a TWIC card, one of my drivers, and I was a passenger, arrived down to the dock to pick up some equipment, and they would not accept the TWIC card. They wanted the driver's license. So I'm kind of wondering, is it not synonymous with the TWIC card? And that didn't work out real well, I'll be honest with you. So help me out there. How does it differ from that?
So. Through the chair, I might actually toss this back up to Marla about if it is different from the TWIC card or not. I'm not sure if she knows exactly what all the TWIC card requires. But.
Ms. Thompson, do you have any insight on Representative Knopf's question?
That's a great question. This is Marla Thompson with the DMV. Great question. The TWIC is not actually a card for driving, though. So it's just, it may work as an ID, and we can get a little bit more information on the TWIC, but it wouldn't be a driving, so it wouldn't be, it would not be the same exact thing as a real ID. We can get some more information on it.
Follow up. Well, no, I mean, thank you for that, but it, obviously it's not a driver's license, and it's not a replacement for a driver's license, but it is a transportation workers identification card for access in these facilities. So just I'm not seeing how this real ID driver's license scenario is any different than what we have in place. So, I mean, you carry a driver's license now and a TWIC card, which most people who are accessing airports and harbors and military facilities currently have. So I guess I'm trying to really understand the need. I'm going to go with a representative over here on my left who has concerns about the data, the database. So, thank you. That's all.
Representative Tuck.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I mean, the real question is, why are we doing this? Federal government's imposing some huge requirements for us to be able to maneuver our private lifestyles. And I can tell you that I've had problems with the database and even with voter ID. I had a problem because what is voter ID doing? Making it harder for rural Alaskans to get out and vote. Because a lot of elderly natives just don't have the identification that's required to meet these requirements to be able to travel. You know, we try to impose that. We've fought that bill several times so we can make sure that all Alaskans can vote. And now not only can they not vote, but now we're going to tell them they can't travel. And it's a huge federal overreach. We have all these different organizations that we have to worry about security. It used to be that the Department of Motor Vehicles used to take a photograph of your have a hard copy of your photograph and go up to Fairbanks. It'd be stored in a vault in the troopers' barracks up there. And I can tell you, no one's going to try to break into those barracks to try to get your identity theft. We're making it easier, not harder, for people to rob our identity. And I've always had a problem with this new ID that we have to go send off to another state, Indiana, I think it is, and wait 30 days. I was just watching a guy trying to board an airplane with his paper ID and having a difficulty with TSA and then having to go through these invasive procedures because he didn't have a great ID. And I know that we're reducing the lines of the Department of Motor Vehicles because, you know, we can get you going through quicker because we're not making an ID right there. You're going to get it in the mail 30 days from now. But I do have a problem with that. I know that the state of Alaska spent a lot of money on fingerprinting equipment, underneath Palin's administration to try to get into this real ID. But the legislature changed that and made it, you know, and the guy got ahead of himself. He's no longer with the Division of Motor Vehicles. He's no longer the director because of going down that path. But I just, I think a better approach is to have the federal government not be so paranoid about the average resident of Alaska, the average civilian in America, and relax a little bit. I mean, the problem that many people have with such legislation like this, reversing things that we've done in protecting Alaskans' rights, is embedded in privacy, is just Big Brother just taking more control. So I'm just going to let you know right up front, I have a problem with it, and it was never, ever proven to me. I've been on the budget subcommittee for Department Administration for years. It was never given, I was never given a good answer on why we needed to do these IDs down in Indiana, because they never showed me the amount of fraudulent driver's licenses that were going out there. And I've asked for it repeatedly. I think I even asked it for again as early as last year. I think maybe even this year I've asked for that information again. So it's never been shown to me that it was necessary. I know that I think our IDs are 90% funded by the federal government if we do this Indiana thing. But we had the little holograms on our IDs that we were able to do right here. We have the verifications. The verifications aren't changing. It's just now the federal government wants more control of that, and they're using these other agencies to do all this cross-examination. I do have concerns.
I wonder if we can bring Senator Murkowski and Sullivan here for a special State Affairs Committee hearing to speak to the to the wisdom of Congress. If I may, a few questions I think are related to Representative Tuck's comments, and Representative Birch also has a few questions. To that last point, would it basically work like a passport? If this were passed, if you got a real ID, that you submit all your information at the DMV office, and then in a few weeks you get something in the mail with your real ID compliant ID from Indiana or wherever it is?
Through Mr. Chair, and again, this is Leslie Royal, Deputy Commissioner at the Department of Administration. It would not be like a passport to get you into a foreign country. So
We're just, as far as the recipient of the ID, you get a letter in the mail, basically. Is that how it would work?
For the new ID? The new ID, yes, from the place where we get them is Indiana. And I just would like to say, and I might also ask Marla Thompson to weigh in a little bit, too, but I totally understand the angst that people feel about Real ID. The legislature, I think, passed the bill in 2008, 59-1. Representative Lynn told me that he was the one that voted against it. And so I totally understand that there are concerns about data. I have concerns myself. That's, I think, why we, not why, I know it's why we tried to introduce a bill that has a choice for Alaskans. And if you are interested in the compliant ID, you can get it. And if you're not interested, then you can continue with the current process that we do right now. And so we're trying to strike a balance between the two sides there. And I don't know that we really hit the balance with it. It may not have satisfied anybody, but we also felt that in 2020, I think Representative Wool brought it up, there's a lot of people who are not paying much attention to this, and then they're going to want to jump on a plane for a vacation and not have a passport or any of these other types of IDs that will allow them to fly. And they're going to be looking back at us and saying, well, A, why didn't you tell me? Or B, why didn't you do something? So we felt that we would offer this up. Again, if it doesn't pass, it doesn't pass. But we just felt that it gave a choice. And so I don't know if I answered your question completely, but if Marla Thompson might be able to weigh in a little bit more, too, if I didn't answer your question.
Yeah, that was helpful, Deputy Commissioner. And I've got one more question before passing the baton to Representative Birch. And Representative Wool asked about this. Is what determines how the expiration of driver's licenses is set? Is that within the sort of sovereign control of DMV to say it's 8 years, it's 5 years, it's 10 years, it's however many years?
I'm going to, actually, Mr. Chair, I'm going to pass that up to Marla Thompson, please.
Ms. Thompson?
Hi, this is Marla Thompson, Director of the DMV.
Please go ahead.
That question, great question. Right now, Real ID can be up to 8 years maximum. The current statute states 5. So that's currently what, and that is put in the statute, is what we can do. We can do 5 years for IDs and driver's license. So it's not something that the DMV controls.
Thank you. And Representative Birch?
Yeah, First off, through the chair, I just wanted to thank you for an excellent presentation. I think the proposal does achieve the balance that many who are concerned about a data breach or something might realize. I think it achieves a proper balance and yet allows commerce and economy to move on. Like it or not, we have a lot of federal investment in this state. We have a lot of federal contractors, federal work going on, and I think it's not unreasonable to expect us to try to conform with respect to the security needs and so forth. Secondly, as near as I can tell, there's no new information that's going to be pushed out online, and it's a question, I guess. Is there any new information that's going to be out there? I mean, everything I see here is all public record. I mean, you can pull up somebody's birth certificate in many cases. You can pull up voting records, and I mean, there's a myriad of information out there for, any teenager with a Google account can go chase down. And I guess, so to address some of the concerns, are we providing or pushing out any new information, or how does that work with respect to the proposal in front of us?
Through the chair, I'd like to toss that back up to Marla Thompson, please.
Ms. Thompson, please go ahead with an answer.
Hi, this is Marla Thompson with the Director of the DMV. That's a great question. The way it, I'm sorry, you probably can't hear me. The way the IDs work, we would not be dipping out to get more information that's not already out there. We're only going to be verifying the information that you are providing. So whichever document that you walk in the door with, whether it be a passport or if it's a any type of, whatever primary document, secondary document, whatever you bring in, that's the only piece of information we're going to be validating. and it's just the minimal amount of information that is asked for. So we understand and are very concerned about data breach as well. So it's a minimal amount of information just to verify that somebody is who they say they are and that that document is actually active. So I hope that answers that question.
Through the chair, yeah, I just wanted to say that that was kind of my suspicion, and it's certainly been consistent with your presentation here. I want to thank you for taking this innovative approach as far as having a double pathway, if you will, for those who are concerned, and I hope we move forward to this in a timely manner. I think there's a lot of Alaskans that are going to be looking to June 6th, I believe it was, with some trepidation as to whether or not they'll be able to continue their gainful employment and access to the military bases and other national areas that we have in the state. Thanks.
And I want to touch in quickly on time and process. We did notice public testimony today. I'm not sure I fully appreciated some of the underlying interests in this piece of legislation until Sunday night, I think, is when the email started coming in. So for those online, we will not be opening public testimony today in the interest of time, and I think, you know, we'll be able to hear a few more committee questions here, but if and when this next comes up before the committee, I think we'll make an intentional decision whether public testimony will be open so that anyone who sits through the presentation will have the opportunity to share their thoughts. So for the four of you online, I wanted to note that, and I believe we have two more questions, Representative Ledoux, Representative Wohl, and then hopefully we can gavel out and not keep our finance subcommittee waiting too long today. Representative Ledoux.
So I was just curious, does the federal government, other than a passport, have anything that could comply with this? So if the state doesn't pass something, can people get a federal ID if they so choose, which is less cumbersome than getting a passport?
Through the chair, excuse me, Representative Ledoux. I don't know that there's one that's less cumbersome than a passport. There's the military ID, but in veterans' IDs that you have to belong to those specific groups. And I might toss it back up to Marla again, but I actually don't think that there's anything less cumbersome than a passport that the federal government would offer. Instead, there's no federal ID card, so to speak. And maybe Marla has another thought.
Ms. Thompson, any further thoughts on Representative Ledoux's question?
This is Marla Thompson with the DMV. Yes, Leslie hit on that this is not a, there's no other federal ID that we know of other than a passport.
Follow-up?
No, that's it. Thank you.
And Representative Wohl.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, through the chair. On that question, it says passport card. Is that like a condensed version I can stick in my wallet? So then that would be kind of like a federal ID, sort of portable and compact?
Through the chair, Representative Wohl. Yes, there is you actually can get a passport card that works like, I know it's new too. It works as like a passport. A card is $55, and I believe, and then it's $30 to renew, and I believe it lasts 10 years like a regular passport. It's handier than carrying your full passport book, but it is a passport. And it's, through the chair, if you don't mind if I expand a little bit. Yes, people could use those, but they're more expensive for them to personally get those cards. And we were thinking that the real ID is actually a cheaper alternative to the ID.
Follow up?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Well, I'm trying to understand the okay, so you're saying that the real ID is basically allows a bridge between, the data still stays in Alaska. So let's say I have a compliant or non-compliant, or real and non-real ID. So you guys have data. You have data for the non-compliant and the compliant. So the data that you have doesn't really change. Am I correct? It's the bridge that is different? Am I oversimplifying it?
Through the chair, Representative Wohl, no, I think you're exactly right. our data is the same, but we're, if you came in with a passport, for example, we're able to then use our technology to go out and look in the passport database to see, again, confirm that it's your passport. If you came in with a birth certificate, we could reach out and look in the birth certificate database to confirm that the data matches.
Final follow-up, Representative Wolf?
I think so. I know we have a 4:30 meeting, so I will. So basically, it's more verification. So if I go in and get a non-compliant, you have my data. If I go in and get a compliant, you've verified a couple other things. Now, how is this digitally different than me just having a passport? Like if I have a federal ID passport card now, so I didn't get this enhanced ID or real ID, I can still fly around the country. I can still go into a military base. I'd already have the passport, so whatever IDs and documents I needed for that, that's all done. You guys don't have a bridge to it to verify it, but they'll let me on a plane with this sort of, I guess that would be a federal ID, my passport card. That would be fine, acceptable, and I could travel around the globe with it, correct?
Through the chair, that's my understanding that you could, yes, with the card.
Just a quick comment. I think my understanding is a passport card only works for Canada and or Mexico, but I might be incorrect.
This is Marla Thompson at the DMV, and through the chair, the answer to that is it actually works for Caribbean, Bermuda, Canada, and Mexico. So it doesn't work everywhere that your normal passport would work. You'd get a passport and you'd get a card as an additional card. That's what I would do.
And then I think Representative Ledoux may have had closing comments and or a question.
Well, I guess I just wanted to remark that although it's somewhat more expensive, it also lasts for 10 years versus 8 years. And that was just a comment. But then my question is, so how much is it going to cost the department to implement this thing? Which seems, I mean, now that I know that, I mean, that all you have to do is carry this little card with you, as opposed to a whole passport, which seemed like a real, I mean, who wants to carry their entire passport? It's ceasing to be quite as important to me that this gets done on the state level. So that leads to my question of how much is this going to cost the state to implement?
Through the chair, there is a fiscal note of 1.5? Of $1.5 million. That's the database upgrades, and Marla might elaborate on this as well. excuse me. It's to do the database work that we need, and thank you, Minta. It's the breakdown is $400,000 for the verification programs to integrate with them, $200,000 for the additional design and security. The $500,000 would just be so that we could have the right equipment across the state, and $400,000 for development work for the printing, the software, and templates.
Just one more follow-up. So what about in future years? Is this, you know, a one-shot deal, or is this going to cost anything more in future years?
Through the chair, actually, I will pass that up to Marla Thompson, if I could, please.
Ms. Thompson, final answer for the afternoon.
Thank you. This is Marla Thompson with the DMV. That's a great question. Yes, the $1.5 million is one time for us to do the database changes that we need to do and the system changes to accommodate what is required to implement the Real ID. And additionally, the cost is just under, for each card production, it's just about $5. So that's what the cost of the fee was going to be for Real ID, $5.
So just one more follow-up. So are you saying then that to have a dual system in future years isn't going to cost the state a cent more?
That's correct. This is Marla Thompson again. That is correct. So it's the $1.5 million is just the set-it fee that we need to set that up. And that would allow us to have both the dual. So you'd have both the Real ID compliant card and the non-compliant card.
Thank you, Ms. Thompson and Representative Ledoux and Representative Bush had a great comment. For those online, James Squires, Pamela Goad, Karen Terry, and Maria Patricia, thank you so much for listening in on today's testimony. And I should note, there's, of course, the option for written testimony, and it's hsta@akledge.gov, and that will reach the committee and will be distributed to members and put on the public record. I think that's all we'll hear today. A note that the next meeting is Thursday, February 9th at 3 p.m., followed by the Finance Subcommittee. And I think today is a DOA Finance Subcommittee as well. So if we didn't get enough DMV, we're about to get more. And with that, we're going to adjourn. It's 4:32 p.m.